There ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, need them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging. Every time I go out and pick me a pig. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What life be without homegrown tomatoes?
We're probably too late for starters, but could you still get tomato vines to plant in the ground?
You know, what depends is when is it going to get hot? You know, so yes and no. I mean, you know, especially if you've got a place maybe with a little afternoon shade, if you get an early variety, I wouldn't go buy a beefsteak or something like that now, but an early girl or even a celebrity or one of those pretty early ripening ones, I wouldn't hesitate at all. Just know that, you know, it doesn't matter kind of what variety. Once the nighttime temperatures start staying warm, you're not going to get much production. You can keep the plants alive by shading them and doing different things, but I have my own opinion about that. I guess that's a long answer to a very easy question. Yes, you can still plant them. I just wouldn't buy a little tiny starter, or obviously it's way too late for seed. Buy as big a plant as you can find right now. And then the trick with that is plant them pretty deep. So the stems on a tomato will grow roots. All those little hairs will make a root. So plant a deep hole or lay them in a trench and then bend the end up and bury a lot of it. And you get this great big root system that way, and that pushes that plant quicker. So
interesting.
Don't hesitate to buy a big, lanky, what looks like might be overgrown tomato plant ever. Just plant them deep or plant them in a trench and bend the end up.
Water Use It Wisely sent out a neat email earlier this week about plants. Their plant of the month, and there were three bird-friendly plants for small spaces, and all of them have beautiful color. You got the Chuparosa, which is one of my favorite flowering-looking plants. They had the Pink Fairy Duster, and then they had the Perry's...
Penstemon,
mm-hmm. Which looks like a weed, actually.
Well, yeah, I guess they're all weeds somewhere. And those are all great for attracting hummingbirds, particularly. And boy, if you get a chance to, have you been for a horseback ride in the desert in the last couple of weeks?
Monday.
Oh my goodness gracious! The Chuparosas are just fabulous along with everything else right now out in the desert.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of times it can be hard to find Arizona native plants in the nursery a lot of times.
Well, they don't have great what I call curb appeal. A lot of the native plants in a container sitting in the nursery, they just don't look that great. They don't present themselves well. It's hard to grow them to where they look good in a cultivated environment, and they just do a lot better in the ground, and as they're matured, they look a lot better. So to some degree, unless you know what it's going to look like at the end, or you're familiar with the plant, it can sometimes make them hard to display and sell. So that's changing, and it's changed a lot in the last 10 or 15 years to where there's more and more of them, and I think guys are doing a better job of growing them and making them look more presentable in the containers. So, you know, plants that do very well in our desert soils, and then you put them in a, you know, nice cultivated soilless mix like you're growing, you know, other landscape plants in. Sometimes we've got to learn they need a little different kind of mix, and we got to learn how to there was a couple of different plants when we had the nursery that we couldn't keep alive in the nursery. We'd overwater them because they didn't need any water. So we'd invariably kill them. So there's some things you have to do a little differently.
What, and you probably got this all the time, what's that bush that flowers right now that's yellow and smells really good? about waist to shoulder high.
Cassia.
Real symmetrical.
Probably cassia.
Cassia.
Mm-hmm. Has a sweet fragrance to it. I tell you what, we went on a walk yesterday afternoon, and it just between the sweet acacias and the cassias and the Texas mountain laurels are just kind of at the end, but you could walk, and of course the citrus is in full bloom. You could walk by a yard and just tell, oh, they've got one. I could without looking tell, yep, there's one. Yep, there it is. It's a sweet acacia over there. So, yeah, if your allergies are sensitive, you might want to be careful. But it is a sensory delight out there right now in the landscape.
Orange blossoms are really kicking. Last night I went out for a walk. And
it's thick, isn't it?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
And again, I have to take a shower because if I go to the store sneezing and coughing right now.
Well, that's true. But
that's not a good idea.
Here's a little tidbit, though. It's not the citrus pollen. It's not orange. We all blamed all of our allergies for years on orange blossoms. They hardly have any. They have a hard time pollinating themselves sometimes. It's all the other stuff. You know, the olive trees that are in full bloom right now are just really bad. Mulberries and ash and, you know, of course, weeds this year, the ragweed and all the weeds that are out there. But enjoy the citrus. They're not the culprit. They're just getting blamed for it because they're very fragrant.
And last year was the first time I'd ever had branches break because of how heavy the citrus.
Yeah, that's very unusual for citrus. They can usually get very, very, very heavy, and that citrus wood, that's what they used to make longbows, archery bows, out of lemon wood because it was so flexible. So
interesting.
It's hard to break a citrus tree.
And it's hard to get a lemon branch that straight. Citrus is very,
yeah, very archy. I'd have to take it out of the main trunks for sure, yeah, yeah.
Now, what about winter lawns? If we've got winter rye in and hit it with another fertilizer, I mean, that's not something that when the warm weather hits, it immediately starts dying off. It's got to get, you know, close to triple digit.
Or triple digits. Yeah, it'll do very well up to about triple digits. So, you know, it's March. You could probably feed it one more time. Yeah. You know, I certainly wouldn't do it much later than this. Fact, if you have a lawn you didn't overseed with all the rain and everything, they're already greening up.
Oh, I'm mowing once a week.
Yeah, some of them never even really went completely dormant this winter.
And I had Scottsdale weed, Ray Lopez, out pre-emergent it because I lost the battle with sage last summer.
Spurge.
Yeah, I lost the battle, and I said, Ray, I don't care if you have to come once a week all winter long, and just flood my property. I don't want to see one spurge plant. So far, so good.
Yeah. Well,
the lawn looks great.
Good. The best battle against spurge is to have a good, healthy, thick lawn, you know, and then it'll help itself.
Good.
Fend it off. But spurge won't be an issue till it gets real hot. So.
Well, I don't know what he sprayed on it, but boy, I'm mowing the lawn now. I'm back to once a week already.
Yeah,
well,
that's a Bermuda lawn.
And I did not have a winter lawn.
I did not have a winter lawn.
I did not plant a winter lawn.
Right.
Ours has looked as good. I haven't fertilized it once all year. And with all the rain and the warm weather coming, I mean, it's thicker and greener than it has been all year.
Yeah, it should be a good year for now what. It can be too good because sometimes what will happen, those of us that did do winter lawns, the transition from winter to summer can always be a little bit of a challenge. And my guess is it's going to be a real challenge this year with all the rain and as healthy and thick as winter grass, rye grasses are. You know, it might be a challenge to get them to die because that's what you're trying to do. You want to basically kill them about, I would suggest about Easter, about mid-April, that you start lowering your mowing heights. Don't increase the water. Try and burn that ryegrass up to give that Bermuda a chance to come back before it gets too late into the summer. So we'll talk about that next month.
That'll be right about that time, yeah. Absolutely. And I've got a couple extra interesting stories that I want to talk to you about, but Arizona Nursery Association had sent an email just on different things that, hey, if you're home and you've got the kids, you know, here's some fun things you can do. And a couple of things that we don't hit on regularly was flower gardens.
Yeah, we do spend talk a little more about vegetables than we do flowers. And, this is the time you can have a, you know, there's just kind of unlimited things you can plant as far as flowers in the and I think they do very well together. In fact, by planting certain flowering things, you're going to attract pollinators to your garden, which will help them pollinate those vegetable plants. So mixing some flowering things in with your vegetables is a great idea.
Help bring in the pollinators.
Absolutely.
You know what always surprises me that brings the bees around is when our ash trees bloom out.
Yeah, they do like those little tassel-y flowers on the ashes.
And, I mean, there's a row of four of them. And mm-hmm. it's a buzz for like 2 weeks.
Mm.
Just constant, them all
well, that's good.
Flying around.
That's good you've got that many bees. Yeah. So, you know, mixing some flowers. And flowers are, again, you talk about getting kids accustomed to gardening and growing things. There are certain things, you know, like sunflowers and marigolds that just come up real fast and real easy. And they're fun for kids to plant. So, you know, you can take your egg cartons and punch holes in the bottom of them and use those for seed starters. I kind of like the little peat moss, the preformed starter trays that are out of, because you don't have to take them out of those. You can just cut
plant
those
them right
and
into
plant
them.
So they'll decompose. But there's some really fun things to do with kids with plants.
Another plant that's going to blow up, and because mine's about ready to, hedgehog cactus.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. You get a good, an average-sized plant, about 30 blooms, and the bees are going berserk over it. I just sit there and watch them for 5 minutes.
That and the there's a variety of prickly pear that has that purple flower on it, the basilaris. It's beaver tail, I think they call it. And they're just almost in full bloom right now. They're fabulous, especially with it's a cerise-colored, purpley-colored flower with, because everything else is yellow almost, cassias and acacias and, you know, there's a lot, brittle bush, there's a lot of yellow in the desert, yellow flowers. And you get that purple of hedgehog or that prickly pear. It's really striking.
And that's an edible too. I even saw it in the store the other day on the top shelf in the produce.
Prickly
pear petals.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good.